This is MSCI Perspectives, bringing to light insights and analysis that help global investors tackle today's challenges. I'm your host, Adam Bass, and today is September 19th, 2024. Everyone's heard the adage that real estate is all about location, location, location. But in a very real way, it's also about debt, debt, debt. The price of that debt, usually known as a mortgage, has been much higher the last few years for a number of reasons, not the least of which are central banks' efforts to fight inflation. As we record this episode, all eyes are on the Fed in the US, where it is expected they will join the list of central banks, such as those in Canada and the EU, that have shifted toward a looser monetary policy, also known as cutting rates. But as I mentioned, that's only part of the story. When I spoke with each of our guests earlier this week, I was looking to fill in some of the details, starting with the very basic question about the role of debt for commercial real estate investors.
When you think about property, you're talking about very large, very chunky exposures across a very heterogeneous asset class. And when you're allocating capital to real estate, there are some investors out there who can go in and can spend the kinds of money required to build a portfolio without taking on debt. But for most investors, there's some kind of optimal balance between equity and debt investment. Most of the transactions that we see take place have some kind of financing attached to them. And so it's really part and parcel of the investment process for most commercial real estate investors.
That's today's first guest.
Hi, my name's Brian Reed. I'm part of the solutions research team here at MSCI. We've seen a lot of attention earlier in the year when there were questions around the potential effects on financial stability. Some of the regional banks were under pressure and there were questions about how much exposure did they have to commercial real estate loans, and were those loans a source of risk for the broader system. That's died down a little bit, but there's certainly still a lot of challenges facing real estate investors. A higher interest rate environment has made it a lot more difficult to finance new acquisitions. We've seen the cost of borrowing increase on new mortgages from somewhere in, let's say, around 4% 2 years ago to something like 7% in the current environment. And that is a substantial increase in the cost of debt.
Our second guest today, friend of the pod,
Jim Costello. I'm with MSCI. I'm an economist. I take some of the data we have in the real estate world and I use it to tell stories.
Agrees. Here's how he put it.
Here's the thing. Commercial real estate, so much of the capital stack is composed of debt. For institutional investors, you know, maybe you're up to 40% of the value of an asset when you purchase it might be debt. For less institutional players, they can use a higher level of debt, up to 60, 70% of the capital stack can be debt. So it's important in the sense of it constitutes a lot of the underlying capital that drives the commercial real estate sector.
We've been reading a lot lately about what's referred to as the commercial real estate debt maturity wall. What is this wall?
Every loan has a fixed life tied to it. It is only so many years of a mortgage. People are most familiar with the mortgage market from their own personal use. In the United States, it's typically a 30-year fixed mortgage that fully amortizes at the end. If you're up in Canada, maybe a 10-year loan with a balloon where you have to pay the remaining capital afterwards. Commercial mortgages, they too have a fixed term, but they vary a bit. Some are shorter, some are longer, depending on what type of capital is providing the debt. But if you have a mortgage tied to a purchase that was made at the record high price levels set in, say, 2022, and now that mortgage is coming up for renewal because it needs to refinance, because the loan is maturing, that becomes a problem. Because if I have a tremendous decline in property prices along the way, when I come to refinance it, maybe there's not enough remaining equity in the investment to be able to refinance at the more conservative rates and loan-to-value ratios that are available in the market at the moment.
Okay, so we've established that debt is sort of the oil that lubricates the engine of the commercial real estate market. And the media has not been shy about pointing out that this engine has been, let's say, pinging as of late, especially when it comes to the office sector. And don't worry, we will certainly get to the office sector. But for now, what are we looking at beyond office?
Some of the same appetites for risk that appear on the equity portion of the capital stack, some of the same appetites for risk appear on the debt portion. Nobody wants to hold all the problems that may exist there without getting compensated for that. There's been more competition to be in something like the industrial sector, where income has been growing at a healthy clip with much more of a move towards online shopping, which generates more demand for logistics space. So it is viewed as safer, and more people have been looking to that. Apartments are viewed as safer to a degree on the equity side, because when I'm managing the building, my cost structure relative to, say, interest rate changes, the amount of capital that I have to spend every year just to keep the asset alive, we call it capital expenditure in the real estate world, it's a smaller number relative to the income that the assets throw off compared to like an office building. An office building, high degree of the capital of the income that you earn every year, you have to put back into the building to pay brokerage commissions, to do capital expenditures, to renovate the elevator system, to make it net zero carbon efficient. All that stuff costs money. So investors are more fearful of it, and therefore the lenders are more fearful as well. But you know, the apartment sector, even though it's more efficient in that sense, there's still some fear because the prices have been falling. And until people see where the prices bottom out, they're going to be a little bit hesitant to originate capital out of fear of having a mortgage go bad. You know, there's no upside for a lender.
What's sometimes not appreciated is just how much population movement we've seen over the last few years. When in the early stages of the pandemic, everyone who could was working full-time remote, there was a large exodus from the gateway city remote towards some of the warmer Sunbelt markets where quality of life was a little bit more desirable, took place. And for a couple of years during the pandemic, what we saw was this strong correlation between those population movements and the returns that the multifamily apartments were achieving. That in turn led to more investor interest in some of these Sunbelt markets. And so capital started to pour in and looked at expanding and building developments in markets that were seeing rents increase at a really rapid pace to try and capture some of that that rental growth. But what's interesting is in a lot of contexts, there's been a reversion towards the mean, not to the mean. You know, we haven't returned to life as normal or as it was pre-pandemic. And you know, it's questionable whether we ever will, but we've certainly seen this reversion towards a mean where there is an increased amount of remote work relative to what we saw pre-pandemic. But for a lot of white-collar employees, there is some amount of in-person office time. We're seeing the usage of transit networks in the big metros creep up, suggesting that people are sort of returning a little bit more towards the pre-pandemic pattern. But because of that, and because I think we saw kind of a snapback in some of the migration trends as things reopened, and as the stuff that makes some of the big gateway markets really appealing as a lifestyle destination, the cultural aspects, the museums, the restaurants, all these things opened up and returned, then people, some of that migration wave that moved out started coming back. And what we saw last year was this this reversal in performance trends, where it was actually some of the secondary markets now seeing slowing rental growth, less inflowing migration, and more supply starting to come online where returns were weakest. And so that's potentially where, when we're thinking about the kinds of potential distress that, you know, that there might be a lot of focus.
And for offices, Brian talked to us about two types of distress. The financial stress we've been talking about.
What comes from exposure to highly leveraged assets where you're looking at a refinancing wall and having to take out a new loan at a considerably higher interest rate. What might have penciled out 2 years ago is no longer penciling out.
And then there's
fundamental distress. That's where operationally the asset might not be generating the kinds of cash flows that it needs to sustain the repayments on the financing. And so, yeah, that could just be higher vacancy rates, lower rents, and so on. I think everyone is very aware of the challenges that are facing office. And so we've seen the demand for office space take a hit. Vacancy rates have been creeping up and up and up over the course of the last couple of years. And that's putting that kind of fundamental pressure on the sector. Some of that is being kind of counterbalanced by in-place loan structures where tenants have leases in place. Those are multi-year leases. And so it's taking a little bit of time for that reduction in demand to play out and to sort of materialize in the figures. But it's well understood. And I think we're seeing a lot of people focus on it. Even within office, there's shades and differentiation. We see variation across geographies. We see variation across quality types where some of the more premium and newer office buildings, those with better amenities or higher energy efficiency and green building ratings are still performing relatively well. The tenant demand seems to be holding up much better in those premium new buildings than in some of the older stock where demand has taken a much bigger hit and we've seen a much larger deterioration in the performance fundamentals.
If you're trying to address the distress, or I should say, repair the engine. Yeah, I'm kind of digging on the engine analogy here, I have to admit. But if you're trying to fix a problem, it's only natural to ask how others have addressed similar problems. If you're my kids, for example, you watch a few dozen YouTube videos about it. But how good a plan is that in this case? 2008, anyone?
We're looking at a downturn in commercial real estate, which has a lot of its fundamentals rooted in financial markets. But there are also significant differences now compared to 2008, 2009. Back then, what we were facing was a very much a liquidity crunch. Problems that started in the residential mortgage market and spread through collateralized instruments effectively caused financial markets to seize up for periods of time. Just if you were looking for debt, in some scenarios, it just wasn't available. Now, debt has remained available. It's just it's become a lot more expensive, and for those that are able to afford refinancing in the current environment, they can get it. So that I think is one big point of difference. But the other is really just around fundamentals shifts in the asset class that either side of the financial crisis, the demand profile, the use case for commercial real estate assets didn't change that dramatically. Whereas even before COVID, there was the move towards distance retailing, online shopping that was weighing on retail and boosting logistics, warehouses. But then with COVID, we saw this sudden change in office working environments. And so that's definitely had a pronounced impact on that demand side of the equation. And so those things are considerations that investors are having to contend with now that they didn't have to contend with in the last crisis.
Yeah, that's the thing. History rhymes, but it's always a little bit different. There's always something a little different, a little new, a little unique at every downturn. This is something I've seen over a number of cycles in my career, where people look to the success that somebody had in the previous cycle, thinking that if they just use a playbook that person who made a ton of money last time did, that they can just repeat that. So everybody points to, oh, I'm going to be the next Sam Zell. I'm going to be the next Jonathan Gray. You know, there's only one of those guys. You got to be your own person and create your own vast fortune from your own insights. And the things that were dislocated in previous cycles, there's always some things that where you can find a few instances of it, but you're not going to find the same dislocations in the same degree. This cycle is different than the SNL crisis in that there's a fundamental issue at play in a much more severe manner than the SNL crisis. Like the SNL crisis, you had a lot of empty office buildings, but that's only because we built too many. We were still filling them up. We were still hiring office workers. People were still driving into the office every day or taking the subway in every day. And that's what's different today. You know, we're hiring workers, but they just don't go in the office. So the demand structure and the income structure for the buildings is changing. It's even though the buildings are empty, like the SNL crisis, it's more of a demand side issue than the fundamentals. And then you layer in the capital changes on the debt side, and that gets more complex. This is a new thing we've not seen before.
We've not ever seen it before, Jim?
Well, we've not seen it in the office market before. We've seen it before. Look at Manhattan in the 1950s. It used to be a really gritty industrial neighborhood. It's called Soho, the cheapest real estate in the city. All these brick buildings. Who wants to live in a brick building? Who wants to work in a brick building? Let's move the industrial base out of here to New Jersey where it's cheaper. So you have a fundamental change. And eventually, it's now some of the most expensive real estate in the city because tastes and attitudes change. It became more of a residential area as opposed to an industrial area. But there were vast fortunes lost from that repurposing of the asset class. It took many decades for that transition to become complete. So every downturn has some different fundamental drivers. And in that regard, this is not a total liquidity crunch like after the financial crisis.
As I mentioned at the top of the show, we're recording and putting this episode together as the Fed is meeting. I asked both Brian and Jim to comment on that. The Fed is expected still to cut when it meets. Will that do it? I mean, is this the panacea, so to speak, that real estate investors have been waiting for?
Yeah, so it depends on the scale of cuts. If I took out a loan early in 2022 before the interest rate spike really came through, you had record low mortgage rates. You're talking like 3.4%. We've never seen rates that low. Nobody that I see is talking about cuts that bring interest rates back down to the 2022 levels. So it's not as if a rate cut is going to solve every problem that's out there from the assets that were purchased at the peak of the market. It doesn't seem like that's in the cards. And so let's say you get an aggressive, let's say you get a 50 basis point cut. Is that going to help? Sure, it's going to help some folks. Some folks who were thinking that maybe they'd have trouble refinancing, as that filters through to lower mortgage rates, maybe some of them can refinance it at more efficient terms, and they'll get through this without a problem. But it won't be everybody.
Brian was a little less optimistic.
Well, I do think you do need to be careful what you wish for, because if the Fed does cut rates, that should eventually flow through to the mortgage rates that real estate investors are looking at. It might take some time, and the relief will probably only be in the early phases of a loosening cycle. It's those deals that are closest to the margin that will benefit most immediately. For assets where there's deeper problems than that are further away from being able to pencil out, the first cut or two isn't really going to make a significant difference. But just more broadly, thinking about real estate as an asset class, it is a growth asset class. And the kinds of scenarios where the Fed might move more hastily to cut rates and cut them more aggressively are typically the kinds of scenarios that have not been good for growth asset classes like real estate. So if there is a financial crisis, a banking crisis, a growth shock, those are the kinds of events where you might expect to see the Fed cut rates faster and quicker, But that wouldn't be a good scenario for most real estate investors. I think what everyone's hoping for is the kind of soft landing where there's a gentle easing, where growth remains relatively stable and robust, but interest rates are able to incrementally reduce as inflation comes back into line around the long-term target.
Okay. Okay. So if the Fed may not be able to save us and we can't count on the past for our repair manual, then, well, what are we looking at going forward? Does the road ahead look any simpler to navigate?
I think it's going to become more complex moving forward. Part of the issue is just the interest rate environment is going to kind of force it to become more complex. The 10-year treasury, it's down from some of the recent highs, but it's still much higher than where it was over the last 7 to 10 years. So, you know, what that does to a commercial real estate investment is that if I am looking to sell a property, I'm now talking to buyers who look at what I bought the property for and look at what I got in terms of financing for the asset, and they can't get financing that's quite as good as that what I got at some time over the last 7 or 10 years. And so they're not going to be willing to pay as much. How do you make the deal work in that kind of environment? So that's where some of the debt world from the debt funds might provide a solution to help kind of bridge the gap between the two. And typically it's going to be kind of mezzanine financing, kind of the high yield debt, where as the capital stack gets more complex, it's something that can kind of plug a gap to help everything come through to make a deal close. That's where I think the debt funds, they come and go based on the availability of credit in the market. For the senior loans, they've been playing a role. But once, you know, things like the insurance companies and the banks are less fearful and they can move capital out there again, it might be harder for the debt funds to compete for that first mortgage position. But that high yield mezz stuff, that is an opportunity for those folks to continue to see growth.
Well, all right. There's definitely some hope in there. Brian, take us home and get this engine humming.
For investors who bought assets at the top of the market when prices were at their zenith and interest rates were at the nadir, there's definitely a lot more difficulty. There's a lot more potential pitfalls for them to navigate and a lot more risk that they're just going to have to work through over the coming quarters and years.
But
for some investors, the downturn might present opportunities. Like if you're able to buy even a troubled asset at the right price point, then you can potentially earn good returns and it can be a successful play.
That's all for this week. Our thanks to Brian and Jim, and of course, to all of you for listening. You can find the latest insights on commercial real estate investing on the Research and Insights section of MSCI.com. And don't miss Jim's appearance on the Peer Credit podcast discussing the health of the U.S. office market that goes live on October 1st. Next up on this program, believe it or not, it's time for the next quarterly roundtable led by MSCI's Chief Research Officer, Ashley Lester. Ashley sits down to discuss the state of the public and private markets as we move into the last few months of this year. You won't want to miss it. Until then, I'm your host, Adam Bass, and this is MSCI Perspectives.